back. It's the World Soccer Talk podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. In episode 115, we discuss NBC delivers the second most watched game in Premier League history, how a new soccer streaming service is giving MLS a bad look, reaction to US women's lawsuit against USSF, plus letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, aka The Gaffer, and I'm joined by my co-host, Kartik Krishnar. Kartik, it's been a crazy week, I know, for you and for me, for different reasons, all of it soccer-related, whether it's travel soccer or just the start of kind of a new domestic season for the American leagues. But from this past week, what was the highlights? What was the big match that you watched that you thought, okay, this is it, I love it?
That's a really good question, because I think obviously one of the matches I was most excited about was the Brum Villa match at St. Andrews, and we all know what happened 10 minutes into that match with poor Jack Grealish. So I guess I would say it was probably, unfortunately, Juve Atleti. I mean, I thought this was going to be a showdown between Ronaldo and the most organized, stout defense in world football. And guess what? Atleti was so negative. So they were just playing at the edge of their box, their own area, the entire match, and rightly got beat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me this past week, and in terms of my highlights of my match of the week, and some listeners may faint at this, Kartik, but my match of the week was LAFC against Portland. And this is a game I watched on FS1 over the weekend. Just an incredible atmosphere at the stadium there in Los Angeles. The game was played at a feverish pace on the pitch. Just a really fast moving, just open-ended game, back and forth. Portland early on had some great chances, and it looked like that Portland could actually kind of pull off a shock victory here. But eventually it became pretty clear that LAFC would win this one pretty comfortably. But I was impressed. I thought in terms of television, in terms of the spectacle, the atmosphere, in some ways that Stu Holden and John Strong, it was actually hard to hear them at times when they were talking, just because the noise of the crowd was so great. And they sang through the entire match, and I thought that was a really good atmosphere in primetime television on FS1, and I enjoyed it. In terms of the Champions League context, so you kind of mentioning the Juve game, which was a great game, fantastic performance, of course, by Cristiano Ronaldo. Now that we know who are in the final eight in this tournament, I think it's time to have a little bit of fun just for a few minutes. And the interesting thing is that during the time that Fox Sports held the rights to the Champions League from 2009 to 2018, they must have been hoping that one of those finals would have been either El Clasico with Real Madrid against Barcelona, or better yet, in some ways, in terms of their audience and their target demographic at the time, a all Premier League final with, you mean, kind of the Chelsea against Man City or whoever it may be. Those two things never happened. And the way that we're now going into the quarterfinals with four of the teams from the Premier League in the final eight of the Champions League, there's a pretty good chance. I mean, we don't know anything yet, but there's a pretty good chance that there might be an all Premier League final. If not, you would hope that one of those teams would make it through to that final match, having, 50% of the teams in the final eight. But for you, Kartik, what would be kind of what would TNT want that dream Champions League final to be? Which two teams would they want in that dream final?
Barcelona against either Liverpool or Manchester United.
Yeah, I was thinking about this one earlier. So, I mean, and that'd be a great match. I mean, obviously, definitely the Barcelona-Man United kind of a rematch from way back when in the early 2000s or mid-2000s. That would be fantastic. I think in some ways, though, Barcelona against Juventus would be a perfect final for Univision. So anytime you're going to have Barcelona in the final, I think it's going to skew definitely to Univision with some big numbers there. I'm sure they're dreaming of that. To me, you mean, it's probably the final. It would either be a Manchester derby or Manchester United against Liverpool in the final, which in some ways would be kind of, you mean, I don't know, anticlimactic in some ways. But once the match happened, once the game kicked off, those would be some monster ratings. At the same time, though, too, I mean, you never know. Ajax could be through. I mean, they've got the way that they play. You can't count them out in terms of just their just brilliance in terms of sheer energy and attacking abilities. But it's set up to be, I think, what should be a really interesting Final Eight. So we'll find out for a lot of the listeners too, listening to the podcast. If you listen to this podcast on Friday, you'll probably already know who's in that Final Eight, as well as what the Final Four would look like in terms of who needs to beat who to make it into the semifinals. But it's set up for what should be a really interesting rest of the Champions League. And the group stage was so-so. The knockout stage has been fantastic. The thing I have to wonder, though, Kartik, is whether or not we could see... I mean, right now, the final is set to be on TNT. But depending on who was in that final, I wonder if they would consider switching that match and putting that on TBS, if it would be at El Clasico. Well, not El Clasico, but it would be a Ronaldo against Messi final. I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Not sure, because they keep all their NBA games on TNT these days, and that includes conference final. And though they have played the NCAA tournament final on TV, so that's a good question. And also, in the midst of this, it looks like there's a realignment in terms of who is going to be leading sports programming at Turner. It's going to be Jeff Zucker, apparently, who runs CNN worldwide. So who's from Miami originally, by the way. So that might, I don't know if this would be like the first test after he takes over of a network realignment, but it's interesting time for sure.
Yeah, and as far as some of the other games from the Champions League, what I would mention too is actually Stu Holden, I believe, has really progressed a lot in the last 6 months working at TNT. I mean, in terms of his tactical analysis, pre-match or even halftime, but pre-match especially when he's going to the tactics board, it's really worth watching. And every time he does it, I always learn something from it. And actually, it's one of those things that I'm contemplating recording it for my kids to watch who play travel soccer, just to take a look at that and see about, I mean, positioning, matchups on the pitch, those types of things, which I think are important for anyone, whether you're a player or a fan of the football. But overall, with TNT this past week, I think they've found a comfort zone. I think they've found a spot now where they're emphasizing the tactics, and they're doing a great job at it. There's no jokes. There's very few mistakes. The chemistry is better. When Tim Howard's on the set, it's always better. And this week, too, with being in Los Angeles, I think really helped a lot, too. So I think they've found a place where I think from here on, hopefully it'll be some good success for them. And Kartik, from this past week, obviously some big games, the Arsenal-Man United game. You mentioned the Birmingham Aston Villa game and the incident that happened in that match. Did you catch the Liverpool Burnley halftime analysis talking about the Birmingham derby?
Yeah, about Grealish. So that was really good to see NBC actually kind of suspend their normal just kind of Premier League analysis and what was going on in the match that they were covering to cover this.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's one of those things that they had to switch gears pretty quickly, and I missed it personally. I was at a travel soccer game, so I missed it. But the reports I heard back were very positive, and then it always helps too to have people in the studio who can talk firsthand about being involved in big derbies and having incidents happening on the pitch and what it feels like as a player to go through that, and also what it's like playing in a derby. I mean, it definitely is a huge occasion in terms of the intensity. And we've seen that just in the last few weeks, the intensity of the pitch, and oftentimes that sometimes carries into the stands, into the stadiums, where there's that intensity too, and really hatred between these clubs, between these clubs' fans. So an unfortunate incident, definitely, but good job there for NBC SN to cover that during that halftime of Liverpool-Burnley.
Let me point out that this is a benefit of the synergy with Sky. I do not think a year ago or even 6 months ago they would have been able to pivot so quickly. So there are benefits. I know we've gone after Sky the last few weeks on this show and the NBC relationship, the Comcast relationship, but I think this is one real positive from that.
Yeah, I think part of it too, Kartik, is too, they're probably feeling their way through this in terms of trying to figure out, NBCSN, that is, trying to figure out what works and what doesn't work and trying to see what's available to them. In some ways, in terms of Sky Sports and Sky Sports News, there's just so much coverage and so much probably things that they can go to actually incorporate into their broadcasts. My concern since day one of this synergy is really kind of making sure that NBC keeps their unique identity, that they don't become kind of a NBCSN / Sky Sports. Sky Sports definitely has their identity, which is very different than NBCSN. And we've seen in the last few weeks that they've begun to kind of blend a little bit from the NBCSN side. Hopefully they'll kind of pick and choose, you mean, the things that probably work well for them, that maybe it's people, you mean, at the scene or resources that they don't have right now. But yeah, so hopefully they'll make some wise decisions there. Now, Kartik, one more thing before we move on to TV streaming news, and that is that I know that you caught something very interesting. Speaking of Sky Sports, from Neil Ashton on their Sunday supplement program that's available through the United Kingdom on Sky Sports Television, but you got a chance to see it.
Yeah, I am able to access it, and all would say for the U.S. audiences, you can get it legally via Apple Podcasts, just the audio version. So it's not illegal to listen to it in the States. Neil Ashton hosts the Sunday show, Sunday Supplement, which is generally a roundtable discussion with other soccer writers, acclaimed soccer writers like the Patty Barclays of the world, etc. And this week he... much to my surprise, because I've watched Sky Sports News and they act like women's football doesn't exist. He brought the U.S. women's national team gender discrimination lawsuit up very early in the show after discussions about Pochettino and Real Madrid and all of that, Gareth Bale, all the sexy headlines, so to speak. Had a very good discussion with it about it with Patty Barclay and one or two others. I'm blanking out on who else was on the show, but they're all names. They're all people we know. And it was a very enlightened discussion, educated discussion, learned a lot from. And then they went on to talk about the She Believes Cup and England's prospects and the job Gary Neville, Phil Neville's doing. I do that from time to time. Sorry. That Phil Neville's doing with the England team, and also mentioned, and this was important for me as I've done a couple of shows now on the U.S. performance, She Believes, and on the U.S. lawsuit, a couple shows for other media outlets, Chris, that Phil Neville, when he took over from Mark Sampson, demanded the women be given England women be given equal travel arrangements to the men, and the FA conceded that to him, and that is a part of the U.S. women's national team lawsuit. If you read the full complaint, there are about 7 or 8 important points in the U.S. women's national team lawsuit. But Chris, there was a better discussion led by Neil Ashton with British journalists sitting around the table about this lawsuit, and quite frankly, his role in the women's game and how I mean, they took a few pokes at us really being kind of an also-ran of the men's game and the leader in the women's game, so I had a lot of sympathy for the U.S. women based on that, but it's a discussion we have not yet had on the American media outlets, even the ones that tend to be to challenge U.S. soccer and MLS more. I mean, we've had some discussion of it, and I applaud Alexi Lawless. I mean, he has actually tried to tackle the subject. Others have just run away from it or spent their time talking about MLS or whatever else, or the champion, you know, UEFA Champions League, whatever. But I was surprised that there was such an enlightened discussion in the UK and not here.
But Alexi Lawless is kind of analysis of this. Is this through Twitter, or is this through television, or is this through... his podcast?
Well, he through his podcast, and you can see it on YouTube. Right. Okay. So I guess that is important, Chris. It was not on Fox.
Right. Exactly. And we had some. It was on his podcast. I mean, the lawsuit happened on Friday, which was International Women's Day. Fox had broadcast on Sunday. I think it was Sunday night. The LAFC Portland game. So that would have been a great opportunity to kind of talk about that in depth. I missed ESPN FC this past week, and I didn't catch the Bein Sports Extra, so maybe they went into... Knowing Bein Sports, they probably tackled it, but I missed it. So there's definitely a couple of outlets that could have discussed it, but it is interesting, Kartik, that you note that it's Sky Sports in the United Kingdom, in a program that's focused on, is broadcast in the United Kingdom. They're targeting the United Kingdom. Yes, you can get it through a podcast, through iTunes, but it's really for a UK audience. So that's definitely eye-opening there. The one thing I would say about Sunday Supplement, which I thoroughly recommend, is that if you're not seeing the visuals and you're just listening to the podcast, you're not missing anything, because all it is that Neil Ashton as the host, many of us know through NBCSN's coverage, but really what it is Neil Ashton hosting it, and then like usually 2 to 3 journalists sitting around a table just discussing it. And usually it's John Cross from, I think, The Mirror, Paddy Barclay, and so on and so forth. So it's interesting because it's kind of a very intellectual, intelligent discussions about serious topics. And Neil does a great job with that too. So definitely check that out. And thank you, Kartik, for mentioning that and catching that, because otherwise I would have missed it. All right, let's move on to TV streaming news. And Kartik, want you to kick this one off and to give your analysis and opinion about this, because it's been a big story the last few weeks in Major League Soccer.
Yeah, and it was. I know FC Cincinnati has a real nice shiny look on their brand new team, but timing was very awkward. So what happened, if you're not aware, is Flow Sports, the new local broadcast partner for DC United, an OTT service which is $150 a year for access to DC United. Unless you're a season ticket holder, then you can get away with paying only $71. This is after DC United has been on free-to-air television or local cable television for the first 24, however many years MLS has been around, first 23 years. Week one, there were all kinds of streaming problems. There were people at watch parties, Chris. There was a DC United official watch party in the district. There was a Barra Brava watch party, which is a big supporters group, also in the district. I know of a big watch party in Loudoun County, Virginia. Also, those three parties I know about, they were streaming problems and issues with the service. So Flow Sports, by the way, has offered full refunds to DC United fans who aren't satisfied, and I don't know if anyone's taking them up on this. On the very same day everybody was talking about these streaming problems, FC Cincinnati foregoed signing an agreement with Fox Sports Ohio or one of those networks in that area, and decided to do the same deal with Flow Sports, which again is an OTT provider. They'll charge a lot of money for FC Cincinnati broadcasts, and they announced it the same day as everyone was freaking out about the DC United New York City FC game. So MLS, I always thought, was really good at spin and controlling the message, but this was another really optically horrible thing and a horrible day to announce that broadcast deal.
Yeah, there's so many ways to look at this in terms of how bad this is. To me, it's a bad look for Major League Soccer because it makes them appear to be a small-time player. Yes, it's a bad look for Flow Sports and DC United and FC Cincinnati, but it is for MLS too. I mean, to me, whether it's maybe Flow Sports was offering more money, maybe I'm sure they've been backed by some VCs, maybe they're offering more money to clubs like DC United or FC Cincinnati in comparison to a local broadcaster on television. And then maybe that's what they went for. Maybe they went for the money rather than for the distribution. And the distribution, especially for Major League Soccer teams, is key. That's something that you want to have. You want to get as many households as possible aware of your local team, and also even for people that kind of channel surfing, going through the different channels on their local cable station, and finding it by accident and then saying, hey, let me watch this game. And we've heard countless stories of how that's happened to soccer fans, diehard soccer fans now, but that's how they started into watching soccer. I mean, just coming across a game by accident. You're not going to come across a game by accident with Flow Sports. And it's a shame, really, too, because it's one of those things that the feedback I read in terms of everything that went wrong with the DC United opening weekends, including not sending any broadcast crew to NYCFC into New York, just up 95, not that far of a journey, but instead of doing the actual broadcast remote. It's really a bad look. I mean, it's one of those things that I found out about later is there's been so many other people that have been complaining about Flow Sports because they have Flow Wrestling, they have Flow, I mean, all sorts of different sports, like probably a long list of 20 different sports. It's not a good look, and it's something that I wouldn't be surprised if there's more deals announced in the near future where Flow Sports is working together. Last but not least, Flow Sports is headquartered and based out of Austin, Texas.
Right.
Of all the cities to have this PR disaster happen, it's Austin. Just as soon as they're out of the news, with everything that's been happening with Save the Crew, here we go with Austin back on the picture. And it's if you live in Austin, I'm sorry for you. It's another bad mark against them.
I just have to laugh about that because I found out about the FC Cincinnati deal before FC Cincinnati put out a press release because it was in the Austin American Statesman and it had the Flow Sports president or co-founder or something talking about their deal with FC Cincinnati in the context of everything else going on. And I actually found that Monday morning before.
Yeah,
the press release from MLS and FC Cincinnati. So the Austin thing is, I guess MLS is significantly invested in Austin now, as we know.
Yeah, and even just the rollout of this. I mean, if it's a brand new, which is Flow FC is the name of the soccer streaming part of Flow Sports. So it's a brand new site. It's a brand new venture for Flow Sports going into soccer. Broadcasting, you mean some Major League Soccer, and also there's some other tournaments too they have the rights to. But in terms of the public relations, the marketing rollout, which is non-existent as far as I can tell, just an embarrassment. And again, too, it looks bad for Major League Soccer too at the same time. The last piece of news, Kartik, in this segment is that Fanatis, which is the streaming service that covers a lot of Latin American soccer, has now added beIN Sports Connect to its list of channels. So it has beIN Sports, beIN Sports en Español, beIN Sports Connect, as well as Gol TV en Español, TYC Sports, all of the Superliga games, and more. And all of this, Copa Libertadores, Copa Sudamericana, so all of this is $9.99 a month, and they've just announced a annual deal, which I believe then, if you pay annually, which is, I think, $99, it works out to be about $8.26 a month, and you get access to all the beIN Sports channels. Something to consider, definitely a good price point. I've been using Fanatis for about a year and haven't had any problems, so something to look forward to, and we'll have more information about this at worldsoccertalk.com. Next up, Kartik, is TV ratings in the soccer world of the United States. Some big numbers. Sunday's Arsenal against Manchester United game averaged 1.68 million viewers across NBC, NBC Sports website, the NBC Sports app, and Telemundo all together, to rank as the second most watched live Premier League match in US history. The one that had more viewers than this one still has the number one claim there. The top spot is the Manchester Derby, which had 1.72 million, and that was back last year, actually, about a year ago. Huge numbers. And of course, on this one, with the time change, with the clocks going forward in the United States, that benefited NBC because instead of having the game kicking off at 11:30 Eastern time, as we're often used to, this game kicked off at 12:30 in the afternoon on over-the-air NBC, which had a huge, huge impact there. Now, Kartik, some of the other numbers, some other big numbers that came out this week too. Manchester City against Watford on NBC, 818,000 people watched this one. Chelsea against Wolves, 459,000 viewers. And one more, which was PSG against Man United. Last week's Champions League match on TNT had 413,000 viewers. Now, looking at Major League Soccer, Kartik, Atlanta against Cincinnati was on ESPN, and it's just been a horrible start for Atlanta so far this season, but 354,000 viewers, so it dropped from the previous week on ESPN. And the big one for me, Kartik, out of all the numbers that came out this past week was Crystal Palace against Brighton and Hove Albion. They had 50,000 more viewers watching this game than the MLS game in prime time on Sunday night, which was LAFC against Portland. So you had a 7:30 a.m. kickoff on a Saturday morning, more viewers between two teams that are relatively in a relegation fight. I mean, the positions aren't safe yet, with really not much of a brand recognition, or not a lot of soccer fans follow Palace and Brighton in the States. They do have supporters clubs, but not huge growing massive numbers there. Had more viewers than the LAFC Portland game, which was a fantastic game. To me, that screams there's a problem there. All right, let's move on to listener mailbag. First up is Craig Shapiro. He says, all right, fellas, real talk. I often agree with your assessments of soccer media, particularly in the pre, mid, and post-match analysis. But when it comes to Bleacher Report and TNT, you are epically off base. It's terrible, unwatchable crap, particularly Stu, who is awful. Kartik, what's your take on this one?
Yeah, I think... Craig is right that TNT just isn't there and quite at the level we want them to be. But it's just, I think we have a point of reference, which is Fox. And there are some good bits of analysis in the midst of all the clunkiness on TNT. We didn't get that on Fox at all in the last few years. I mean, it was almost as if Fox had mailed it in at the end. Granted, I mean, in fairness to Fox, the last season and a half of Champions League, it wasn't officially announced, the Turner deal, but we knew about it half a year before it actually was formally announced. So the last year and a half, they were operating knowing they had lost the rights. So the commitment wasn't there.
Yeah, the one thing that Craig says, and I replied to him on Twitter, but I didn't get a chance to read the reply or see the reply before we record this podcast, is whether he's talking about his kind of analysis about TNT being terrible and unwatchable, whether or not that has anything to do with which games are on TNT. So, for example, you mean there's only one game on a Tuesday, only one game on a Wednesday. With Fox having one game on the FS1 and another one on FS2 at the same time, or sometimes it was Fox Soccer Plus, sometimes it was your Fox Sports regional channels, whatever it may be. But the accessibility on television is a huge factor. And a lot of people, that the criticisms of TNT has been based on that, like, TNT is terrible. At the end of the day, I think it's one of those things in terms of if Craig is talking about the analysis, it's like anything in life. In terms of movies, music, you name it, people have different tastes. And I think for me personally, I think TNT is hitting all the right marks in terms of their analysis, their unique pieces by Fernando Perez. We had some more this week. Also in terms of just the discussion, it's watchable. And that's something I could never say about Fox. My job is that I'm paid to watch soccer effectively, and with Fox Sports I had to force myself to watch it because it became so predictable, so boring, so non-Champions League at times, because they would have a whole segment about news that was happening in Major League Soccer. I'm like, what has this got to do with the Champions League? And I would give TNT full credit. They've had a lot of problems. They've fixed those problems, but every single second that they have is focused on the Champions League, and that is a huge plus. And hopefully it'll grow from there in terms of the viewers and become more successful. JP has a lot to say about the last podcast where we talked about MLS ratings. and the issues surrounding that. JP says, I think Chris is close to articulating the cause of MLS's rating issues. Soccer fans have a multitude of options to satisfy their soccer itch. At the risk of being labeled a Euro snob by MLS fans, the quality of play is often much better elsewhere and becomes glaring when viewing MLS in comparison. I am just one example, but only can stomach most MLS in the summer when that comparison is less fresh. I compare it to watching the NHL following a Winter Olympic cycle when the NHL allowed players to participate. For a few weeks after the NHL games seemed to be so much slower, would need time to readjust and find the same enjoyment as before the Olympics. And let me just pause there for a second and say that JP does actually do a really good thing, and which is a smart thing. I think any listeners that are interested in doing this, he went ahead and went to worldsoccertalk.com and then posted it in the comments section under the podcast. And actually said, okay, I watched like 4 or 5 games this past weekend from Major League Soccer as a test, and described what each one of them was like and whether it was watchable. I think out of those 4 or 5, only one of them was a really highlight. One was one he was really excited about, and that happened to be also LAFC against Portland. The others had, it was just kind of boring games like the NYCFC, the DC United game, or so on and so forth. The Atlanta Cincinnati game, where you kind of think that the actual acoustics of that stadium, if you're in that stadium in person, I'm sure it's amazing. On television, it sounds like crap. You don't see much of the crowds, the way that the cameras are angled. And I'm sure it's a great atmosphere, but it does not come across on television. It sounds very echoey, very like a closed stadium. It's just not a good atmosphere. Anyway, so JP goes into more length about what his experience was in the comments section. Now, JP goes on to say, I really don't know how MLS can counteract this problem. To be honest, their focus on live attendance over TV ratings is probably wise in the long term of the league. Good attendance and mediocre ratings is a more sustainable than ratings without attendance. I think they should shorten the schedule to what it used to be in the early days, April to October, if I remember correctly. Bigger picture, as a compromise between the pro-rel supporters and detractors, regional MLS leagues where the top 2 to 3 teams qualify for a US/Canada-wide tournament like the Champions League that would also be played during the season. So definitely some good feedback there and some good suggestions by JP. Last but not least, Jose Rodriguez says, hey guys, love the show as always. I came across an article on Twitter from US Open Cup. They are not affiliated with the actual tournament, but just bring news and information about it. They stated that there are plans for the US Soccer Federation to broadcast every match from the tournament nationally. The article even goes on to state that teams will need to hire more workers and have the ability for a broadcast truck to be at the event as well. I believe this is the right direction to go in for the tournament to get the recognition it deserves. My question is, do you know what partner they will go to? My assumption is ESPN Plus, Jose says. Now, Jose, what I would say is don't get your hopes up, because we've been hearing quite a lot of news. Well, not a lot of news, but we've been hearing for several weeks about, just wait, there's going to be a broadcast partner announced that's going to broadcast the US Open Cup. And I say don't get your hopes up, because I don't believe it until I see it. I mean, the US Open Cup has always been really bottom of the totem pole in terms of the attention given to it by USSF, really, and Major League Soccer. I'm not expecting much. The article does say, in quotes, the details of the new broadcast arrangement have not been released, but an announcement is expected soon. Well, that was a week ago. We still haven't heard anything. So I guess we'll have to wait and see. Kartik, as far as your network and contacts and insights, have you heard anything, or and if not, any thoughts where that US Open Cup coverage might go?
I'm guessing it's Mike Cujo, who does a lot of lower division soccer matches in the U.S. or Flow Sports, who we've talked about earlier in the show. I don't know who it would be. Now I have to say one thing, and I know so many people out there, particularly in the Twitterverse, are huge fans of the U.S. Open Cup. I am too, but I've worked in lower soccer. I continue to work in lower division soccer. It's a lot of costs that are incurred stream games at a high level. So it might actually be a better compromise for a lot of the clubs that are in the early rounds to go through one of those sorts. Well, not sports, but MyCujo or something lower key than ESPN Plus. But we'll see. It has to be done soon. The Open Cup kicks off in the next qualifying ends in 3 weeks. So the Open Cup will kick off soon after that.
Yeah, I think, to me, it's you have to spend money to make money. And if USSF is going to put it on MyCujo or Flow Sports, I mean, that does not help the US Open Cup in the future in terms of making that more of a commercially successful operation. To me, my guess would be YouTube. I'm just having all the games on YouTube, and that's something that's very accessible. Unfortunately, it's probably not what Jose is expecting, and it's not going to make it a success, but that's my guess. Hopefully, I'll be surprised, and hopefully it'll be on something much greater. All right, guys, if you have any questions for us, feedback, rants, raves, tips, you name it, you can reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. Now, Kartik, before we go, where can users and listeners find you on Twitter?
You can find me at KKFLA737 on Twitter.
Cool. And I'm at World Soccer Talk. So thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, Spotify, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audio Boom, and WorldSoccerTalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review. Kartik heading into another big weekend, this one filled with a lot of FA Cup matches, including Manchester City, your team, against my team, Swansea City. Ah, I love it. But what should they do?
Enjoy your football.